All right, we're in C++ world with some very special guests. We have Mohsen Aksin and Craig Simmons. Yep. You run the team. You're a technical fellow who's been at Microsoft for a very long time, both of you have. So go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourselves before we get started in this conversation.
You go first. Okay. Well, first, I actually don't run the full team. I run the PM team, and I work with two other folks, Steve Crewe and Chris Schaefer, to run the whole team, and we all report to Mohsen here.
Okay.
I've been at Microsoft for almost 20 years now, not quite. I got another few months to go.
Nice.
Started in developer division, stayed in developer division, and kind of haven't gone anywhere else but developer division, working across all the different technologies, being part of .NET, being part of Visual Basic, being part of J++, and now part of the C++ team and helping to move that forward.
Excellent.
Like Craig, Craig has described my current job. I'm actually a technical fellow, which means I have a company job as well as a team job. Within developer division, the two teams I spend the most time, the teams I manage are the C++ team and the user experience team. Mm. Like Craig, I've been in the company almost 20 years. I took a small hiatus. I actually started off more of a server guy. I did work on networking. I did consulting for a while. I did web transaction server that led me to Calm. Calm led me to .NET. Came back into DevDiv. I've done both technical and management jobs. In O2, I actually ran the Exchange product. Mm-hmm. So I had a VP job running Exchange. And for the last 4.5 years, I've been back in developer division. And I would say I've been more focused on, obviously the native developer and developer division, but I do get involved in other aspects as well.
Excellent. And also, as technical fellow, it's sort of the highest level of engineer at Microsoft. I mean, that's one way people think of it.
I am never going to get promoted.
That is true.
I'm never going to get promoted. And
interesting.
In a way, it's kind of interesting. It's very cool because it allows you to actually do the right thing. I don't have to do something because that's going to impact my review one way or the other. I can get fired. I can get demoted. I can't get promoted. So
okay.
I think you're empowered at that point to really put a company hat on. That's what you're supposed to do.
Excellent.
Do the right thing.
All
right,
well, let's talk about C++. I mean, we spent a lot of time talking about .NET over the years on Channel 9 and also C++, but it's now 2011, so we wanted to come and kind of get your state of the union and talk a little bit about the language and where it's evolved and where it's okay. evolving, et cetera. So
I think we're going through a renaissance, let me say it that way, in C++. It's a language that was important. And we've never actually really kind of backed away from its importance as a company, but in a sense, I do feel there's kind of a renaissance. There's a resurgence of the native developer of C++. Mm. We're feeling it. A big part, neither Craig nor I were actually on C++ 2.5 years ago, and I think we consciously selected that space to be our next kind of job. Mm. And mostly because we felt that that was a place that was, it's not like we thought, hey, we could change this thing. It's more like the conditions were ripe for the right things to happen on C++, and we wanted to be part of that.
Okay.
And I think we're seeing that starting to happen. So,
yeah, there's a lot of things happening in the native development space, broadly in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
And we at Microsoft have a lot to do to be part of that, those things that are happening in that space.
Mm-hmm.
And we sort of saw that, some of that investment, some of that passion, we weren't taking advantage of, and really for the last, it's been 2.5 years already?
It's been 2.5 years.
We've been sort of trying to re-engage inside of Microsoft and get the rest of Microsoft to understand that renaissance.
Sure.
Put together product technologies and stuff that take advantage of that. So.
And, just to be clear, I don't think that the native developer ever went away. I'm a native dev. I'm proud to say I'm a native dev. I've always been a native dev. I think what happened is almost we got to the point where we maybe took things for granted. Us as native developers, and the world took native developers for granted.
Right.
And in a way, we didn't work very hard to make our voices heard. Both ways. I think the large companies, the influential tech companies, didn't spend enough time reaching out, soliciting, input, engaging with the native developer, and the native developers were just busy, were just kind of working hard, and didn't realize, people are not paying as much attention to us as they should.
Mm-hmm.
I think also the re-engaging with the community, you find that there's a lot of the breadth of C++ is impressive. It's used in a large number of places, which is a huge advantage. except it also makes it a little more challenging to engage with. It's not like you can just go and say, okay, that, you know, any line of business, Fortune 500 line of business company, that's our community right there. Since C++ is used in line of business, it's used in servers, it's used in clients, it's used in mobile, mm-hmm. It's used in industrial manufacturing, health, all that kind of stuff.
Game development.
There are so many different communities, it's hard to spread ourselves across all of that. And I think that that means that the community seems, in any one vertical, seems smaller, but it's not.
When you put it all together.
Yeah, when you kind of put it all together, it's
and
not.
And it is actually, you know, again, it's both a wonderful thing about the language mm-hmm. that enables that level of diversity. It's unique. It does make it difficult because, in a way, there's no such thing as the C++ developer or the C++ developer community.
Okay.
There are very important pockets. There are places you can go reach out to, you can learn, mm-hmm. you can engage with. But it's always bigger than we think it is. Let me say it that way. We keep thinking, we figured out how big it is, and it's the dark matter of the developer universe. It's kind of out there. It's impacting gravity in so many ways, mm-hmm. and you know, it's not as visible. It's not as shiny. It doesn't reflect light as well.
I like that analogy. That's very good. Yeah. But I mean, even inside our company.
Yeah.
I mean, I wasn't a developer inside of Microsoft when I first started, and I was writing in native code, as well mm-hmm. as, you know, managed code was starting to become the next big thing, and it was interesting. But a lot of the developers who work here full-time on Windows, on Office, on SharePoint, on you name the product, there's a bunch of native devs.
Yeah.
They're writing a lot of C++, a lot of custom libraries. So what I wanted to ask you guys is, the thing that's interesting about C++ is it's a low-level language, but it's also high-level. Objects, classes, interfaces.
Sure.
I mean, yet we keep talking about, you know, and I'm going to use this word because, you know, we talk about dangerous or unsafe code. So in C#, if you're ever going to use a pointer, you have to put it in an unsafe block. Mm-hmm. So right away, the messaging was, C++ is not safe.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk a little bit about that because, you know, that's not necessarily true. It gives you a lot of power
mm-hmm.
to
sure.
do stupid things or just to make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about that.
Well, let me just go to your first. You actually kind of talked about two different things.
Of course.
One is, you know, the low level and the high level.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of an interesting learning for me coming back after, you know, I was the palm of C++ about 7 years ago. Came back in the last couple of years. The difference is kind of interesting to me. The C++ has grown up quite a bit. We at Microsoft sort of have taken on using the C role and that's where the company has come from. All the products that we build were all written in C with a little bit of C++.
It's C with classes is what a lot of Microsoft internal developers would tell you. C++ is C with classes and maybe V tables for COM.
Right.
It's kind of the
way
In fact, C++ itself has matured significantly such that it can be considered, as you point out, a high-level language.
Mm-hmm.
It does have all the attributes of most high-level systems, but it's done in such a way that gives you the power and performance needed for high compute-intensive applications or for the control you need in certain mission-critical scenarios. Or
even access to the hardware in a very thoughtful way.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the things we're intrigued by, we're actually very interested in that growth of C++, is things you, as a C dev, used to expect that you only can do in a particular way. Actually, I have to give the C++ community credit. They found strongly typed ways
mm-hmm.
to achieve the same goal with the same perf, which I would have never thought would be possible. I was used to the idea when you lock a buffer in DirectX, the most efficient way is you need to do unsafe type aliasing.
Mm-hmm.
You're just going to set up your struct pointer and you're going to alias an index into it. Turns out the right work with iterators can actually give you that same power, the same performance when you look at the generated assembly code
mm-hmm.
with a cleaner, higher level type safe syntax. So I think we had, you know, definitely some of us have underestimated that C++ has evolved to take the best of what C gave you.
Right.
And incorporate more of that type safety, more of that richness.
Another
high-level language.
Sorry. Another example is, in COM. When I was working on COM and helping to define the future there of the COM infrastructure, it was all pointers. It was a pointer to a vtable, and you had to do the addref and release and query interface, and you had to worry about matching those. And these days, if you look at modern COM stuff, you don't see any of that. You see a smart pointer. Mm-hmm. And again, the community is sort of showing the way on that kind of stuff.
And that's a case where we internally, I mean, ATL jumped on smart pointers fairly early and made it, it's basically, other than circular references, mm-hmm. you are not going to leak. You are not going to, you're not doing a QI, really, most of the time, in an explicit way, if you unless you really need it.
And you can, right. That's that layer approach.
Add ref release, and you can. And obviously, again, the same issue. Again, ATL did this well, and it's kind of one of the doctrines of C++. You can always get the raw pointer mm-hmm. if you need it. So if the library doesn't cover you, the raw pointer will. But I'm surprised, like Craig, I've actually been surprised how many cases are now covered at the library or the language level. Without much work for you to get them, roll up your sleeves.
It's incredible. I mean, and that to me, when you know, and to be clear, we're not comparing .NET versus native embedded. That's not interesting anymore. But the fact that, like you said, C++ is unusually performant, yet also is abstract, which is to me incredible. And if you look at the STL, mm-hmm. those algorithms in there are super performant.
Yep.
And you call them like you would any, you know, it's right.
Actually, almost related to the second part of your question, I think we tend to focus more on highlighting the value of what is C++. Actually, a lot of us are .NET fans. We're JavaScript fans. We know that the diversity in applications is increasing. It's not decreasing. So it's creating more room for all of us. It's actually creating more room for JavaScript, more room for .NET, and more room for C++. What we tend to focus on instead of even drawing comparisons between us and, say, other languages or other runtimes, is we can talk more about what makes us unique. What is that value? One of the value props, the one we just talked about, is the fact we have a language where it's very smooth for you to transition very up and down. Performance is always non-negotiable in the library, the syntax, the language. It's just non-negotiable, and if it ends up being not quite as perfect just to get the performance right, to just allow the optimizer to have a better chance of keeping that thing in a register, we will do it in a heartbeat. And the community has always done that. So I think that's one of the first and biggest value propositions we have as a language, and is a way for people to self-select. You can look at the language and you can say that one of the trade-offs you have is, you know, more control. Like Greg said, the safety issues, we found a lot of very interesting mitigations. You can you can be very, very type safe in C++ if you choose to do so. Mm-hmm. But the fact that it does allow you, in a very very natural way, to unsafe yourself. I don't like you. I don't like that word. Mm-hmm.
One of the values when you connect that layered approach, the ability to drop down to that lower level, what it gives you is the ability to get immediate access to new innovations.
Yeah.
Whether that's hardware innovations, whether it's operating system innovations, you can drop to that lowest level and not have an abstraction between you and that lower level innovation, whether it's access to registers in the CPU, whether it's access to OS components themselves, as soon as they're available to the C++ developer. That immediate access, and that gives you sort of a time to market advantage as well, right? For allows you to, as a C++ developer, to take advantage of something in your application that
first.
Maybe the other guys don't have that can't get that time to market.
Yep.
So we talk a lot about productivity and enabling productivity even in the C++ space, but really from a time-to-market advantage, we see this having a fairly key impact, because it's productivity is one thing for sure, and we're trying to enable that, but immediate access to innovations, that's where you're going to gain your own advantage in your application.
You said the P word, which is great, because that's what we talk a lot about when we evangelize our platform stack.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a difference between productivity in native and productivity in managed, right?
Yep.
And beyond the garbage collection and type safety, I mean, let's talk about that, because you just said essentially C++ is object-oriented, but it's not. You don't have to be object-oriented in C++. You don't have to use classes, right? That's not how the language is created.
Yep.
You can.
Yep.
So
well, the thing that surprised us is, you know, some of us, again, old-school C devs, have struggled with the idea that OO could actually get to the performance level of a competent C developer, and it has. It actually has. Yes, on both. You can. One, it has the flexibility to say, look, if you're a procedural developer, it's great. You can still use inline assembly, too, if you wanted to, inside your code. But the thing that I would say, developers like me who are the C with classes and maybe VTables crowd have gotten to the point where they became a lot more open-minded about embracing fairly old or even more esoteric, no, I shouldn't say esoteric, but more richer concepts like C++. Now you're seeing the rise of template metaprogramming.
Yes.
And you're seeing the rise of domain-specific languages. And you're seeing the rise of even more sophisticated forms of computing, of programming, than even just OO. And it's the nature of the beast. It works. And it's a fairly good, I mean, again, it's a surprisingly good language to take you all the way from inline assembly to template metaprogramming. And live to mix.
And, yeah, and the two actually mix fairly well in the sense of, you know, some of the template metaprogramming is used to enable object-oriented programming to be as performant as you would want to write it linearly.
Because you can inline more, you can, you know.
Sure, absolutely. And so the two are melded. You know, you could think of template metaprogramming as a different thing, or you can think of it as a smooth transition or smooth enhancements to object-oriented. In the same way that C++ added object-oriented to standard, you know, C functional programming, and so that transition, it's kind of one of the interesting hallmarks of that language, and something that people can leverage in those different domains.
Interesting. So, you know, now that we're in sort of, as I guess Bjarne is how he pronounces his name. Bjarne, I always pronounce it wrong. Herb Sutter always corrects me, and I can't remember what he says.
Herb says Bjarne.
Okay, Bjarne. So,
yeah.
So, you know, he talks about how essentially the concurrency problem has been the biggest thing for the past 50 years. You've always been able to write threaded code in C and C++. But really what I'm trying to ask is I want to talk about that which is probably one of the most powerful features of managed code, which is a garbage collector, a generational garbage collector that's asynchronous, which makes it really easy for people to quickly prototype things. Is there any thinking about, you know, you mentioned that you have these great performance gains in C++ with objects and even templates. With the garbage collector C++, I mean, why not?
Well, one, having the freedom to be able to alias types makes pretty much very, very difficult, if not impossible, to do at least a classic generational garbage collector or a type-aware garbage collector. People have definitely done conservative garbage collectors. They have worked. I think rather than answering the specific question about garbage collection, I do want to go back to the point that you're seeing a lot of diversity in apps. And again, where C++ shines is the fact that depending on the kind of app that you're building, memory management itself changes. There's not one memory management model that works for every type of app. Mm. If you're building a very small, very fast data snacking app, one, you're going to look at the weather, you're going to run it for a second, you're going to shut it down. The things that matter for that app is not whether it leaked or not. The things that matter for that app is did it start very fast? It's going to go away. You have the best garbage collector in the world is the operating system. That process is going to go away. It's guaranteed. It's not going to fragment. It's going to go away. So I think that's just the tip of an iceberg. A very sophisticated dev, on the other extreme, is going to want to use arenas or pools of collection where they want to take a whole bunch of mallocs and do one free and get rid of an arena. Game developers are notorious for that. You don't want to go allocate memory for every particle during runtime. You probably pre-allocate in your level, load the level, cast things inside of it, and then just close that heap when you close the map.
Just doing server style programming, yeah, where request-based programming as well, you tend to use.
This is far to say that GC is not useful. GC is incredibly useful.
Sure.
The closest C++ has got to GC really is a lot of cleanup on ref counting.
Right.
As I would say, at least the most accepted. It's definitely been conservative GC. There's been attempts to do type GC. The most widely accepted memory management technique, actually, before, GC is fantastic if you have something that's going to run for a while. If you're running VS or Outlook or IE, they're going to run for a while. You want to watch out for fragmentation. You want to watch out for leaks. You want to, you know, and that's where GC truly shines. The C++ community has basically more or less coalesced, converged around the idea that for those cases, you're going to go with a ref counting approach. Obviously, COM led the way on that
in
the mid-90s. Now, but you're seeing those ideas show up in things like shared putter in C++.
Right.
And now, the trade-offs are different. You get deterministic finalization. You can't have cycles, and you have a more predictable fixed memory and response time in your system. So I think we're passionate that the best that we can do is just teach the trade-offs. The trade-offs, no one technique is perfect. Not all the apps are solvable by one technique. And actually, we believe there's a lot of apps that the .NET technique or the GC approach is very, very good for those apps.
Right.
And as much as possible, we'd like to actually guide people where that app is the right answer is GC. You should think about the managed languages for those apps. But if you are disciplined, you don't manage cycles. If you need deterministic finalization, ref counting is a fantastic solution for memory management. If you are very, very worried about the overhead of allocation, the allocation arenas is the place you want to go. If you're going to be small and fast, just start and shut down. Don't worry about everything else.
Excellent. Yeah. Now, let's talk a little. One of the things about C and C++ that I don't think they get enough credit for is how portable they are. So, you know, Java was invented, and it's the, you know, one language to run everywhere.
Yeah, right.
But, in fact, C++ actually is that,
yeah.
Right? So let's talk a little bit about its portability.
So, as you point out, there was a lot of noise in the late 90s around write once, run anywhere, that kind of thing. And it turns out, if you look back even through that time, the number one runtime system that enabled that portability actually was and still is C++.
Mm-hmm.
And I say runtime system because it's more than just the language.
You have CRT and STL.
Yeah,
sure.
It is the libraries that go along with it that make up sort of that definition of C++ runtime system. And we see a lot of use of that. And you see it at again, very many different layers. You'll hear us talk a lot about layers. You see it at a library, just a math library that is really agnostic of any OS services or any, frankly, even hardware services.
Mm-hmm.
And that math library is reused across many different projects, that kind of stuff, all the way up to entire applications, including UI, that are portable across them. And that allows for people to, you know, from our perspective, allows people to migrate their applications to the Windows platform. And where that's appropriate for them, and allow them to then incrementally take advantage of some of the innovations that the Windows hardware ecosystem and the Windows operating system can bring to those applications. But they're typically factored in such a way that provides a core that is portable, and then a set of things that leverage the services of that particular operating system. And that really is just empowering for the ecosystem. It allows you to build an application that takes advantage of where the key sockets are from a business perspective.
Mm-hmm. That factored is actually the interesting. Native developers, I would say there's probably, instead of even saying C++, the native developer is a developer that has a particular level of sophistication mindset. It's not necessarily they're low level or high level.
Mm-hmm.
I think they have kind of a level of sophistication is the best way I can describe it. And one of the things that they were able to do during that era, and actually before and after it, the mistake that a lot of people have made is to try and say that the end-to-end experience is portable. Native developers, I think, have always had the idea of they're sophisticated enough to understand what can and should be portable versus what can and should be platform-dependent.
Mm-hmm.
And that balance is actually what's allowed it to thrive as
right.
the most popular cross-platform.
Mm-hmm.
You know, game developers often do target DirectX and OpenGL.
Mm-hmm.
But they're very aware when they, it's not like they target them on some common denominator. They really exploit DX when they need to on, you know, the Windows platform or on the Xbox. And I think that sophistication is something we are, you know, we're fascinated with, we're interested in. We think it doesn't mean that, you know, it could come at a beginner level, at an advanced level, it could come in almost any domain. But I think there is such a thing as kind of the native mentality, and part of it is kind of how to factor your code so that you have that balance.
It's actually pretty similar to the memory management conversation in the sense of there's no one size fits all, the different domains. And I think that's one of the things that we went through and other parts of the industry went through in the 90s and the early 2000s of write once, run anywhere was the panacea for everything. It turns out, and I think the C++ community knew this all along, that's not true. Instead, you need to think about sometimes I need to use, you know, this part can be portable, this part needs to be take advantage of the innovations of the specific platform. Just like in the memory management, they think about, they're sophisticated enough to think about when to use
sure.
which part. And that layering or the sophisticated of how they break up the application really kind of is a hallmark of the ecosystem and the language and runtime that is the C++.
Absolutely. I mean, and it's a hallmark of good engineering.
Yeah. Sure.
I mean, I think sometimes as a company and as an industry, we don't pay enough homage and respect to engineers.
Right.
And that's what software developers are.
Yeah.
And they, you know, we have to remember that.
And the languages help. I mean, you do want a language as much as people like or dislike those features. We had a language day one that had conditional compiles. that had ifdefs, that had things you could macro out. It had a bunch of tools, some of them very elegant, like templates, some of them maybe less than elegant, but it was a language ready to give you the configurability of your code. And it also was a language that, you know, Craig talked earlier about how you as a native dev always have first access to the OS and the hardware, which is true. It's because the OS itself is built native.
Sure.
So you'll always have first shot at it. So I think we, you know, we kind of understand that, again, we have some unique attributes in the language, and the language was built to enable excellent engineering practices. They can be abused. We've seen them be abused. But
and I think that's where you mentioned earlier about the bad rap of, you know, it's hard or it's unsafe or whatever. You know, it comes from, yes, it can be abused. If used right, it can be elegant and very, and you know, computer science oriented.
One of, I'm sorry, actually, I just remember, one of the reasons it's interesting to be able to do cross-platform in C++ is because the platforms are native and you are native. You can actually partition your code so that you don't have to build these specialized marshalling layers of all the data types between you and the OS. It makes it much, much more easier, you know, far easier, to create these platform-dependent pieces of your code and still have them integrate with the rest of your code. Because you know what? A string is a string is a string all the way down to the OS. An array is an array is an array. A pointer is a pointer. So because those data types are uniform across all platforms actually you're going to deal with regardless of what they are, it gives you a unique opportunity. What happens in other environments is you really want the runtime to help you out. The runtime has to help you adapt to the new platform. In C++, it does not.
Interesting.
The language, the OS is built in C++ and C is C++, so.
Sure. I mean, all general purpose operating systems that people actually use are.
Yes.
Yes.
Right.
One last question, because I know you guys are busy. We could keep talking for hours. And I want people to know out there that they're going to start seeing a lot more of these types of conversations on Channel 9, because there's such a big community out there that we need to reach, and they need to be able to have this cross-communication, which we're already doing on the great VC blog that Diego runs and stuff like that. So Visual Studio C++, or Visual C++, when you look at Visual Studio, which in about, I guess, 5 years ago or so became this sort of integrated suite of tooling.
It was longer than that.
You understand what I mean.
Yeah.
So it seems, you know, I want to say this in the right way, that Visual C++ is sort of out of place when you think about all of the other tooling that's supported. All of it is managed or scripting, you know, iron, whatever it happens to be. Let's talk about that. I mean, you guys have you're recently on the company.
Yeah.
We just released VC10 not too long ago, a year ago now?
Yep. April last year. Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about how you fit in to that world. And for the developers out there that you're targeting, to give them this massive IDE with all of this tooling and unit testing that has been designed for to span these different runtimes that are very different.
I'll talk about half of it.
I don't know if I asked a question.
I'll leave the harder part for you to cover. In Visual Studio, I would say we're almost like a country. You can think of us as a country. We have enough things that bind us together, actually, all of us, C++ and JavaScript and VB and C#. There's enough things that we all look at and we all like equally inside Visual Studio. So we do have unique differences. You know, for a while, we still have a different project system. Or, you know, the build systems obviously have to be different. The challenge we have is, I think some, you know, again, C++ is probably the language that has the broadest applicability. So in a theoretical sense, VS could get dominated by every possible designer you could ever have for C++, from embedded systems to games to what have you. And I think historically in C++, what we've indexed on, what we've focused on, is core language, core IDE, features, debugging, editing, profiling, kind of those core services. I think in the other languages in VS, they have a little more luxury to build higher-level designers and value-add, I'd say, for a couple of reasons. One is they have more targeted domains. The more you can understand your domain, the more you can build higher-value tools.
Sure.
You can build a specific form designer. You know, VB1 had that. And we couldn't have used it to build Excel or Word in C++. So I think, you know, I would say, I mean, again, as the people who work on C++ in Visual Studio, we like Visual Studio. We are part of Visual Studio. There's enough of Visual Studio that we feel we are very, very good fit for. I think the challenge we have moving forward is how we think about that diversity of our target audience, mm-hmm. and then how much tooling do we have to do in Visual Studio to support that level of diversity. The one I wanted to answer is, I think if you look at the value-added features in Visual Studio, take either developer productivity things or our application lifecycle management tools or testing, etc., I think you start seeing there's a variance, and I'll leave it to Craig to try to answer how we think about the variance, what we think we want to do about it. We're actually feeling pretty good. But
okay. Yeah, one of the things actually that I hear from the community and from different people is, well, C# has this, or JavaScript has that, or mm-hmm. When is C++ going to have this? And because of the diversity, the answer is we're not going to have everything possible from every language. Visual Studio is a multi-language, multi-role environment. Mm-hmm. And so, C++ can't have everything that everybody else has. And so it's not our objective, actually, to replicate the features, make sure that we keep up with any other language. That's mm-hmm. not an objective. What instead we want to do is we want to make sure that C++ is the best tool for the particular problem domains that the C++ community is actually tackling. This transparent layering, this immediate access to the operating system, mm-hmm. this template metaprogramming kind of the language itself able to work at many different levels. That's stuff that other languages don't have, and so we want to make sure that the tooling and the value that we can bring is actually targeted to the C++ audience. Mm-hmm. So there will be some things that could be generally useful that we unfortunately don't get to in any given release, mm-hmm. But it's because we are sort of focused on particular aspects of C++. Mm-hmm. There are some things I think that over the community has rightly pointed out that we probably should have done in previous versions, mm-hmm. And we are working very hard to take that backlog. We've heard from the community a lot. The backlog's large. Resources, even for Microsoft, are limited, mm-hmm. And we're working as quickly as we can through that backlog of things we have heard from the community. So hopefully over the course of the next 18 months, as we're able to talk about some of the things we're doing, and we ourselves are learning and able to commit for the product cycle, mm-hmm. We'll be able to have some great conversations with the community in general on those things and get excited about the fact that, yeah, we are working through that backlog as fast as we can.
Excellent.
I will point out, there are going to be some things on that backlog that
you beat me to it.
We're not going to get to. Cool. And some people are going to be disappointed and others will be really excited. But the engagement with the community mm-hmm. that we've seen over the last year is really helping us to pick and choose the right things to do, and I'm super excited about what our plans are. How far we can get through our plans, we'll know over the course of the next year or so.
Cool. Yeah, I mean the most important thing. I mean we are Diego and the rest of the team. We really do want to engage in a very deep, very honest way with the community. We want to hear. It's a very complex language. It's a very complex world of libraries. It's a very complex possible set of target scenarios and runtimes. And we need the community to help us mm-hmm. prioritize. So I think that's one data point. We've definitely invested more and more and more in community outreach, building that bandwidth, building that connection, allowing us to listen. We have an existing backlog, like Craig said, it's very large. Mm-hmm. But I think the community can help us sort it.
Cool.
Actually, the community can definitely help us sort it. I mean, the final thing I'd say is, again, it's not disclosing too much. I think don't be surprised if in the future you start seeing tooling, as in, designers or what have you, mm-hmm. that target C++ first. That would be unusual for Visual Studio. It hasn't happened in the past. So I can't talk more about it, but
that's
I think
fine.
Don't be surprised if you start seeing tools that for the first time, the first developers that have access to them that can exploit them are the native developers in Visual Studio, and vice versa. You will find tools that are managed first.
Yeah.
But I think we're getting to that level of balance where we will build tooling that is targeted towards some of the scenarios that seem to be much more natively focused. Mm-hmm. And we are not hesitant to do that in that scenario. So stay tuned. Exciting things.
Right. Yeah. So the model of replicating, that we're not trying to replicate each other and have a single language that has, or multiple languages have all the same tools and all the same abilities and stuff, that kind of defeats the purpose.
Sure.
You'll see it the other way around, right? You'll see, the managed guys will have tools that mm-hmm. are unique to their value proposition, and C++ will have tools unique to our value proposition.
So excellent.
That's where we're running.
Perfect. Well, hey, it's been great to chat with you guys.
Thanks very much for the opportunity.
And, hey, man, I hope we can come back soon.
Sure.
You know, and talk about a little more deeply about some of these great things. And everybody, stay tuned to the VC blog, and we'll talk to you guys hopefully soon.
Thanks again. Thanks a lot.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Great to meet you.